Hi, Bridgie. How are you?
I am well, still waiting for my cake for my birthday. Thank you.
Long time. Let's start the meeting, honorable members. 4 minutes past in my budget. Let me check we're about 15. And now I'm checking whether, we might do the quorum. Can we first bow our heads where we are just for a moment? Thank you very much, honorable members, and the stakeholders that are with us. Let me just officially open the meeting and greet everyone who has managed to join the meeting, especially during the month of March, when we are left with 2 days before the International Women's Day. We might as well take it easy this day of the International Women's Day, but as a woman, where you are, you know what is it that it comprises, and also what is it that it meant to us. We really appreciate that we have managed at the end of the day to get the International Women's Day. There are those people that couldn't make it. They thought that they will wake up in the following day, but they couldn't. So we must just be so appreciative and also very thankful for that to happen to us. Now, Lindy, can you then, Lindy?
Hello?
Lindy. Yes. Can you also confirm the attendance? I've tried to welcome everybody with, I think, Lindy, our meeting mustn't be very long, knowing that there are streams of meetings that are ahead of us, and knowing that people have to rush for buses and transport to the parliament. But we have to stick to our schedule and also our timetable to have the meeting, understanding that there is still outstanding departments that apologized during the time that they were supposed. But we will look at that and see whether which Friday can we use, whether it's this Friday or Friday. We'll talk about it and come up with clear position and proposal to the honorable members for that. Lindy, can you confirm the presence and the attendance of the people that are in the virtual platform?
Okay.
And also include that with the apologies if there are any.
Thank you very much, Chair. Today is the end members. Today is the 6th of March, 2024. Chair, I wish to confirm the following members in attendance of this meeting, Chair. I have you, Member Mbana, as our chairperson of the portfolio committee. I have Member Pilangulu, I have Member Iris, I have Member Van der Merwe, I have Member Masango, I have Member Marie, I have Member Manganye, Chair, I have Member Mtongo, Chair. From the members assigned, Chair, I did not receive any apologies. And also from the department, the minister attended an apology that she will be attending the cabinet meeting, Chair. You have your support team consisting of the content advisor, our committee researcher, our committee assistant, as well as the executive secretary, Chair. We have a few members from the department who are also in attendance, Chair. I haven't seen anyone from the Justice Department. I've been trying to allocate them, Chair. So that's the confirmation and apologies for today's meeting. Thank you very much, Chair.
Chair, thank you. I did not hear my name. Peterson.
Okay.
Yes, so apologies for that. Maybe I didn't see your name. Maybe you've entered while I was recording. I'll record your name, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Lindy. it seems as if that it's a fully house. Honorable members have money to attend. As I have already acknowledged them, and also acknowledge the officials that are with us, and then maybe we have to give over. The department is supposed to be with us, Mindy.
The department attends as observers for the processes, yes. We've got a Peter Nechipala as well as the PLO, Arulani Ngobeni. So we've got those two in the meantime for now from the department.
Okay. Thank you very much. I have already also acknowledge them and also welcome them in the meeting. Sometimes it assists us to just have, they must have the feel of the meeting and the discussions. It's not really compulsory for them, but we really appreciate their presence. Okay, thank you very much.
I cannot hear you, Chair.
Thanks very much.
We can't hear, Chair.
Chairperson.
Hello.
We can hear you.
Hello.
Can you please look for a better position? We can't hear you. Hello.
And that is in.
Even now.
Okay, let me change the position.
Yes.
Honorable members, I was saying it seems as if it's a full house of attendance. We are on item
Chair?
Hello?
Member moved for the adoption of the agenda. We need a seconder, Chair. She just moved for adoption.
Okay.
Member Tongo.
Thank you very much, Lindy. Anyone who seconds the adoption of the agenda?
I second, Chair.
I second. Okay. the adoption of the Lindy, did you manage to get the Department of Justice?
Yes, Chair. Advocate Praise Kambula is here. I think she presented the last time. There is a Justice Department in our ministry.
Oh, thank you very much. You are welcome.
Recording in progress.
We can't hear you, Chair. Can you move to a better position, Chair?
I think Chair must ask Member Stock or somebody else to chair this meeting as she experienced problems. Hello. Hello.
Sorry, members. I think the
honourable members.
Okay.
Are you able to hear me for now?
Yes, Chair. We can hear you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Chair, can hear you, but Chair, I think you must ask somebody else.
No, thank you very much. Thank you very much, Aris. I've heard what you have said. I was about to say that Mamu Manganyi or Honorable Manganyi, when I am out of the network, will you please chair for us? Because the problem here where I am, they told us that there won't be electricity for the whole day. So that's how I experience, and that's why I experience this. But if I am in, I will chair the meeting. As I have heard that Advocate Kambula is present with us. So Advocate Kambula, are you ready? Advocate Kambula. Advocate Kambula, are you ready?
Sorry, Chair, my apologies. Yes, I am. I am ready. I was trying to open
what
the mic.
Yeah, you can flight your presentation, then you take it from me. If I am out of the system, Mamu Manganyi also assist on us. Thank you very much. Over to you, Advocate.
Thank you, Chair.
Advocate?
Just a minute, Chair.
Okay.
I'm trying to get the presentation.
Trying
on.
To get, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Sorry, is it showing?
Yes, Advocate, we are able to see it.
Thank you. Let me put it on slide mode. Thank you, Chair. I would like just, I'm not sure whether my deputy minister has joined because he called me saying that he's going to join. And he, if he is in, then he is supposed to be introducing the presentation. Okay. Maybe he's not in, Chair. All right, then, as I am Advocate Praise Kambula from the Department of Justice, and I'm responsible for pieces of legislation that relate to the protection of the rights of vulnerable persons, including the older persons. And I would also like to put on record that as the Department of Justice, we are quite excited with this exercise of the amendment of this bill, of this legislation. We are one of the departments who made a request that the older persons act be amended, because there were certain provisions that we were unable to implement in our courts. And as you know, that we are also expected to collect certain data that will be going to the register for older persons. So we had certain challenges. Now, the presentation, the purpose of the presentation, Chair, is about us responding to the questions and the concerns that were raised during the public hearings on the older persons bill. So we have, we were given on the letter 5 questions, which are reflected there on the screen. But as I'm going through with the presentation, I will be touching on each and every of the questions. Now, the first one is that the law does not protect older persons when it comes to their property rights. As we know that we have this clause 7 capital B of the older persons, which says that an older person has a right to protection against any form of violence, sexual abuse and discrimination based on gender and abuse related to property and land rights, which is actually the one that we're going to be talking about, as well as the abuse related to the right to inheritance. So in terms of Section 25 of the Constitution, no one may be deprived of property except in terms of law of general application, and no law may permit arbitrary deprivation of property. So we move from this premise that the Constitution already protects older persons not to be deprived of their property, as well as the Domestic Violence Act. And I may say, Chairperson, that the Older Persons Act has a provision that recognizes the implementation of the Domestic Violence Act. So that is why then I made reference to the Domestic Violence Act, as well as, and also that we, as you know, Chair, that we have recently amended the Domestic Violence Act, and the amended version of this legislation has started to be operational on the 14th of April, 2023. Now, Section 1 of this Act, which is the section that gives a definition to domestic violence. So domestic violence is defined in terms of a number of acts of domestic violence. And one of the acts of domestic violence, which we have included in the amendment, is elder abuse. Because we understood that there is a lot of abuse that older persons are experiencing in their domestic relationships, particularly from their grandchildren and their children as well. So in the same act, then we also have the economic abuse as one of the acts of domestic violence that constitute domestic violence. So what it says is that it includes then any person, including the older person, that any person who's subjected to economic abuse is subjected to economic abuse when your property that you have an interest in is disposed of without your consent. So interest is at a lower level. So if I can define interest, I mean, compare it with the right. When I have an interest in something, so what it means is that I might not be the owner of this property, but I have an interest in it because I'm living in it. So, and when I have the right to that property, it might be the right of ownership, but we reduce it to a level of an interest so that there is no one who is living in a property and has an interest in that property, and the property is disposed of without the consent of that person. So what it means is that if an older person is living in a shared residence, it could be with a grandchild, and the grandchild or the son disposes of the property without the consent of the older person, despite the fact that the older person is not owning the property, does not have the legal rights of ownership to that property in terms of this provision, that son or that grandchild is exposing the older person to economic abuse. And also, we have also, in terms of the definition of domestic violence, there's one that is about the coercion. So it is an act of domestic violence to coerce any person, including an older person, to do or to abstain from doing something that he or she has a lawful right to do. That is, for example, as we're talking about the property rights here, in terms of the example would be retaining a property. So meaning that the son is subjecting an older person to coercion, if then is forcing the older person to sell a property or to move out of the property. So in terms of the Domestic Violence Act, that is an act of domestic violence that will entitle them, the older person, to make an application against the abuser, make an application for a protection order against the abuser. Now, moving to the second concern, what if older persons cannot afford legal fees associated with the transfer of assets of their deceased spouses? So we do have Section 39, subsection 3 of the Administration of Estates Act of 1965, which then provides that if any heir is unable or could not, without hardship, be required to pay the costs involved in having any immovable property to which he is entitled according to a distribution account registered in his name, the master may authorize the executor to cause a note that the property has been bequeathed or inherited, as the case may be, to be endorsed against the title deeds of the property. So what it means is that this is the provision that is protecting older persons who cannot afford legal fees. So it authorizes the master, to authorize that the immovable property to be declared as inherited by the heir, because in this instance, the older person will be the heir. So meaning that there will be no cost involved. So the state then will be able to carry those costs. And also, in certain instances, the office of the chief master also has entered into or concluded a memorandum of agreements with pro bono attorneys so as to assist the older persons or any person who is an heir and does not have money to pay for the legal fees of the transfer of immovable property. So that the pro bono attorneys to come in and assist in those instances. And there's also the MOU that has been signed with Legal Aid South Africa to assist in so in such instances. Here it would be with Legal Aid South Africa. It would be in instances where maybe a person has got an income but is insufficient to permit that person to do the transfer of that immovable property. But in this instance, then we will be talking about Subsection 9, Subsection 3 of the Administration of Estates Act that will then be permitting the master to have this property registered in the name of the older person without any payment being paid. Now, moving to the next concern, which is about the clerks. The clerks should be receiving special training to understand challenges faced by older persons. We totally agree with this one, Chair. And what we have done as a department, we developed the Handy Hints Guide. And the reason for us to move to this step, it is because we were writing letters to the Department of Social Development requesting them to amend this legislation because it had lacuna in certain areas that were then making it difficult for us to conduct training in this act. But I'll make an example. It will be giving prosecutors responsibilities to exercise a prosecution, but in civil proceedings. And we know that prosecutors are only doing work that is limited to criminal proceedings. So in those instances, then it made it difficult for us to compile the learning material with a piece of legislation that itself contradictory in terms of the proceedings, like in terms of the criminal procedure and the civil procedure. So they were both in contradiction. And we also received as a department concerns and even written concerns that were coming from the judiciary to say that they are unable to implement this legislation the way that it is written. So we had to write then those letters to the Department of Social Development requesting them to amend this legislation. So in the meantime, then we decided that let's develop the Handy Hints Guide. And the Handy Hints Guide is to sensitize then our court clerks of the reasonable accommodations that need to be afforded to older court users. And so it is a guide then that provides them, that sensitizes them of the possible physical, emotional and cognitive impairments that may face older persons when they enter into the court system. So now we are in a process with a bill now being in place. So, and addressing some of the issues that we were concerned about. So Justice College has not waited for the bill to be passed. So what they have done is to start then to work on the development of the training module for older persons, because this is one module that has been outstanding for many years and we wanted it to be developed. So now they're about to finalize the development of this module and will be coming then to, as soon as the bill is promulgated, then the training program on older persons will start. But in the meantime, there are Handy Hints Guide that our clerks of the courts are using. And it also takes to social context in matters that relate to older persons as they come to our courts. And we know, Chairperson, that that handy in Scant is not enough. So we need a full-blown training program for our class. Now coming to the next concern, courses should be brought closer to communities. And this is our response to this one. We started a project on the rationalization of the magisterial districts and divisions of the High Court. And this is the project that started in 2014. It is a massive project because it's about addressing all those demarcations that were done by the apartheid era, and to fragment and differentiate communities along their racial and ethnic lines. So we have been working on it since 2014, as I have said. And during the period 2014-2018, then the rationalization of the magisterial districts of Gauteng, Limpopo, Mpumalanga, and Northwest were finalized. But as we were moving now to the rest of the provinces, the district development model was introduced. So then we had to go back to those provinces that we have finalized to do the rationalization thereof, now to align them to the DDM. And when we were done with that, then we moved to Eastern Cape, Free State, KZN, and Western Cape to align them also to the DDM. So that process has been done. And one of the positive outcomes of this project, it is also about bringing the equal and equitable access of court services, particularly to older persons and persons with disabilities and vulnerable persons. So it is about bringing access to justice closer to people. And now we are in a process right now, in a process of finalizing the rationalization of Eastern Cape, Free State, KZN, and Western Cape. And this process is expected to be finalized before the end of May. And these provinces have already been aligned to the DDM. So we believe that with this exercise, then, we will be able to address this question. Now, coming to sign language, there's a request that we should provide sign languages at our courts. And this is what we have done. Amongst the three GBV Amendment Acts that were signed into amendment bills that were signed into law by the President in the previous financial year. So we have now the criminal. Amongst them is the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act, which was an act that was about issues. It was amending the bail provisions. It was also increasing sentencing in matters that related to gender-based violence and femicide. Then we also included the request that we received from the older persons. In 2019, we held a working session with the organizations of older persons. So we wanted to have an older person-centric or an older centric criminal justice system. So one of the issues that they raised to us was that they would like to have intermediary services. And they also mentioned that some of them, then they have lost their hearing ability. So they would also like to have a sign language. But they said to us that it should not be really sign language, because now they've reached that age and not be able then to go to school for sign language. And this is what we have done in this legislation, which became operational on the 5th of August to respond, among other things, to the requests that we received from the older community. So in terms of this legislation, it introduces the gesture language. So meaning that gesture language now is regarded as viva voce, or meaning that it is oral evidence for the very first time in South Africa. Otherwise, previously, we did not have a piece of legislation that recognizes a sign language as oral evidence admissible in our court. So that's the first thing. So we called it gesture language so as to accommodate the request that we received from the older community. And it also says that demonstrations, gestures, or any other form of nonverbal expression, including the use of devices to communicate, are allowed as oral evidence. So it has gone deeper and extensively, you know, beyond what we call sign language. And also, it has a provision there, which I think that it might not be necessary in this instance, of witness under the age of 18 or a witness who suffers from physical, which is this, it might be relevant to this one, a witness who suffers from a physical, psychological, mental, or emotional condition which inhibits the ability of such witness to give her evidence, viva voce, may therefore use demonstrations, gestures, or any verbal expression, including the use of devices to communicate when testifying. So meaning that a person in your way in which you are communicating, if you are using your hands, if you are using verbal expressions, if you are using demonstrations, so that is allowed in court as viva voce evidence. And now, so it is one area then that will accommodate then the testimony of older persons who have that physical or psychological or mental condition that then prevents them from testifying orally. And what we have also done, after we have done that, in February this year, I think that was on the 22nd of February, 2023, we distributed a circular, and this circular is a circular that is requiring courts to keep a database of ad hoc sign language interpreters, because we learned that from our caseload that we have very few cases that require sign language or demonstrations or gestures, as the case may be. So there are very few in our caseload, and therefore not justifying us as a department to appoint full-time sign language interpreters. So what we have done is to enter into contracts with reputable service providers so as to assist us to provide these services as and when these services are required. So then the courts now, in terms of this national circular, are required to keep a database of ad hoc sign language interpreters, so that when the case comes through in our court roll, then the court manager does not come stuck. Can quickly call any civil society that will be able then to provide these services for us. And I would also like to say that there was a time at Chairperson, I think that was in 2016, where we took some of our interpreters and have them trained on sign language. But we learned that round about, I think, 2018, and this is what we shared also to the older community when we had this working session with them in 2018, that our interpreters, we learned later on that they lost that skill, and they lost it because of being out of practice, all right? Why? It was very few cases require sign language in our courts. So it was waste of money on our side by taking them for training. And so that is why now we are saying that let's have these services coming through when we have these cases in our courtroom. Now, the department also developed the minimum standards on reasonable accommodation and measures to access justice for court users with disabilities. This is this strategy. It is a strategy. We develop a strategy. From that strategy, we develop the minimum standards. And that was done in 2020 during the time of COVID, so we had enough time of developing this strategy. So then this strategy, it gives a basket of support services that are provided to persons or to court users with disabilities. But within it, we have also included older persons as well. So the first is that it provides ad hoc sign language. So a court that has been upgraded in terms of this minimum standard must provide all these catalog of services that are reflected there. The ad hoc sign language interpreters, it must have a database for those. It must also be able to provide a physical accessibility in the form of the wheelchair ramps. It must have elevators and others. Then they will have those voice commands in their elevators. It must have a disability ablution facility, particularly for the wheelchairs, so that people who are using wheelchairs are able then to access our ablution facilities. It must have a demarcated area for guide dogs, all right, for those who are completely blind and are using guide dogs. And so we do have also the mats for the dogs, that is the beds for the dogs, and also the bowl that is for water for the dogs, that is also provided in that waiting room. And we started then to take our educational material for GBVF. We converted it into braille, large print, and pictorial graphics, and we also converted the legislation into audio material. And now we are in the process with all these amendments that have been done to go back then and do the audio version of the legislation. But what we have learned now is that people now are no longer using the CDs, because we use CDs. So now we are in a process now of seeing as to what is it that we should be using to convert the legislation into an audio version. So all of these, and also to provide the intermediary services and also the handy hints guide. So the older persons also, you know, benefit from this. It also requires that in queues, then older persons must be given preference. And so all of that is in these minimum standards on reasonable accommodation. So thus far, starting from we developed the strategy in 2020-2021, and we developed the minimum standards. So in 2022, we started then with the upgrading of the course in line with the minimum standards. And thus far, we have upgraded 149 courses, and the project is still moving on. Now, the intermediary services, I decided that let me also include the intermediary services, because this is what was requested by the older person. The role of the intermediary services in court is to permit a witness who is traumatized, and now in terms of this piece of legislation, the Criminal and Related Matters Amendment Act, which became operational on the 5th of August 2022. So we decided now to expressly include older persons, so that they legally qualify to receive intermediary services. So the role of the intermediaries is when a person now testified, in this instance, an older person is testifying in court. So we'll be testifying in a private testifying room. And the courts then, inside the courtroom, there will be these screens. We have initially we had three screens, but now we have reduced them into two screens because of the budget cuts that we have been experiencing. So now the screen that is there on the other side is for the gallery, All right. And the other screen, it is for the court officials so that they are able to see what is happening in the testifying room. And the magistrate has a small screen that is before him or her on the bench, so as to be able then to see very closely what is happening in the private testifying room. So the intermediary will be there sitting with the older person, and the role of the intermediary is to convey the questions or all the communication that is coming from the court to the older person, and the older person will be testifying to court via the intermediary. So using the language of preference, and the intermediary then will be communicating the questions to the older person in a manner that the older persons will best understand. So that is the role of the intermediary. And we are also protecting the older person here, because the older person will not share at all is what is happening in the courtroom, because we are sort of protecting the older person also from the voice of the accused, and so that it's not intimidated by the accused, and also from the sight of the accused, because it's unable to see what is happening in the courtroom. So now with this provision, it is possible for the older person to come to our court and not enter the courtroom and not even have a feel of the court space, to that intimidation, that fear and all that, and not even know that I was in a courtroom, all right? Because does not see anyone who is in the court, does not hear anything that is happening in the court, but the only information that is getting is from this kind person who has been trained to provide intermediary services to this older person. All right, and has already talked with the older person to build the rapport and to understand the level of understanding and so as to be able to convey those questions in a manner that the older person would best understand. So now the intermediary services now are provided to older persons in terms of this act, with effect from the 5th of August 2022. And also, we have also, this is also the request that they made to us. They said that they would like to, for our court to recognize the court accompaniment services. The court accompaniment services, it will be that person will be accompanying the older person to come to court. And it might be the child, it might be the relative, it might be a neighbor. So now we are recognizing those services by giving the person who has accompanied the older person to come to court to testify. Give that person the witness fees, all right? The witness fees is a combination of the travel allowance and the food allowance. So that person will be coming to court as if now has come to witness, to provide a testimony. So we have included them there, so they are able then to get. So meaning that it will be the older person will get the witness fees, and also the court accompaniment person will also receive the witness fees. But there's a catch there. They need to be permitted by the prosecutor to come. All right, because we had to have some kind of a bar so that we don't have an abuse of these services. And also, with effect from the 5th of August 2022, it is something that we decided as a department to also to include, and also for the benefit of the older persons, we have introduced now the virtual proceedings, all right? So meaning that the older persons now will be able to testify at their places of safety, at their homes. They don't need to come to court. And now, as a department, we are in the process of seeing as to, if now they're going to be testifying at their homes, what is it that we need to provide them? Because when they come to court, we give them witness fees. Now we are in a process of changing our policy so as to provide them with with data, so that they are able then to pay for those to pay for data. But that policy is still under development, but the act is already in operation. Now, these are the other things that we have introduced with these 3GBV Amendment Acts, which I thought that they are worthy of communicating. In terms of sexual offences, now we have there are mandatory reporting provisions, meaning that if a person, if an older person is abused sexually, all right, there's a mandatory reporting on an old, on an older person living in South Africa. So what it says, this is Section 54 of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act, which then says that an older person who receives community-based care and support services other than from a family member, from a facility or lives in such facility to receive such services is considered in terms of the Criminal Law and Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act as a vulnerable person. So meaning that any person, therefore, who has knowledge, reasonable belief, or a suspicion that a sexual offence has been committed against an older person must report such to police, all right? So that is in terms of the sexual abuse. It places it on every person who is an older person in South Africa, whether you are a national or a non-national, and the failure to make that report amounts to a crime in South Africa. And we did the same thing in domestic violence. Section 2, capital B of the Domestic Violence Act now says that a person who believes or reasonably suspects that an older person may be a victim of domestic violence must report such to a social worker or police official. It is in terms of the Domestic Violence Act that we made reporting to be made to social workers, because we are trying to tie in the domestic violence with the older person, having the older person a provision that recognizes the Domestic Violence Act. So we decided then to include the social workers there as well. So it's not about, so if you know you are a neighbor and you know that there's an older person who is being abused this year, you know, so you are committing a crime if you don't report that to a social worker or a police official for sexual offences, it is with effect from the 31st of July 2022, and for the domestic violence, it is with effect from the 14th of April 2023. Now, we have certain limitations that I think that we should be communicating to this committee chair, that we have high attrition rate in cases that involve older persons. And that is why when we're amending the 3GBV acts, we decided that let's inject provisions that will be providing support services to older persons so that we are able to retain them in the system. So many of them, when the prosecution, you know, will be communicating this to us, they say that they make affidavits that will be saying that, no, I have forgiven so-and-so. When the prosecution will be informing them that you don't have a right, because in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act, Chairperson, no one has a right to withdraw a charge. It is the prosecution that has that right to withdraw the charge. But you know, in the streets, you know, people will be saying that go and withdraw the charge. But legally, there is no complainant who has the right to withdraw a charge except for the prosecution. So what you can do as a complainant is to make a request to the prosecution that the charge be withdrawn. So the prosecution gave us the report that the older persons would start crying and beg them and say that I have forgiven this person and I don't want to go to hell, all right, because I don't want to go with a heart that is filled with unforgiveness. So this is what they will say in many instances. This is the report that we received from the prosecution. And there's a high withdrawal rate in this case, in cases that involve older persons, because of some of those reasons. And now, as I have said, that we have now recognized the court accompaniment. We are not providing court accompaniment services. I would like to make it very clear. What we are saying is that an older person who wants a grandchild to accompany her or him, or a neighbor, or a social worker, or a member of the civil society organization is permitted to do that. And but we will provide them with witness fees. And the other thing is that, which I think that is a limitation for us, and we have been waiting for this bill to be passed, is that our court clerks need to receive intensive training, because what we are providing them right now is just a guide. It's something that says that when you see an older person, these are the limitations that they have. These are the reasonable accommodations that you must provide when you see them in our court system, and. So it ends there, and that's the end of our presentation, Chairperson. So I will await then for the questions. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Advocate. I am excited about your presentation, you know, because you seem to have covered most of the concerns that we had about justice. Thank you very much. Honorable members, there is a presentation. Can we interact with it? I see hands. First hand is Honorable Ari. Honorable Mhlongo. And then followed by Polny South. Other hands. Honorable Masango is also in the queue. Honorable.
Good morning, Chairperson. And I want to say thank you very much for the report of justice, for the presentation. I just maybe some clarity seeking question is that we find that many of our elderly people, as you have mentioned in your presentation, you know, they did get, I want to actually to say robbed out of their properties. As you mentioned also in your presentation, that many of our elderly are suffering dementia, etc. And I want to find out what measures do you have in place to ensure that where people's properties being sold or what, ever, that this transaction has not been then declared as a legal transaction, and are there any form of evaluation to evaluate this person to see that, you know, that this person is fit to do this transaction? And we also find that many of the times that even some of the lawyers are involved with these perpetrators. And I want to find out what is the Department of Justice doing to ensure that these transactions become, you know, not, what do you call it, illegal transactions. And then also in terms of cases where elderly are involved, which, like, we already get missing, because we find that many of times when you report a person And then I'm not sure if this is with the Department of Justice or if it is police, that many of times then it only after 48 hours, you know, they do a search for this missing person. And we know that many of our elderly, as people are growing older, they become more like, I don't know what to say, they become more like children. But I want us to treat this, when elderly get missing, the same as we treat it like when children get missing. And also the other thing is in terms of prioritizing the cases of elderly, because specifically if there's a court date that is way ahead, there's maybe 2 or 3 months that the elderly person must wait before he appeared in court. That also put a lot of strain on them and also affect their health. So what is the possibility that elderly people's cases must be prioritized where elderly people are involved? Thank you, Jay. Can you hear me?
I think I'll continue as I was the next speaker. I think the chair has a problem again.
Yeah, sorry, Chair. Can I just add, I also want to add to that, not only their properties, but also you find sometimes that these people, because they are not in a rightful state of mind, that you find that they draw up wills. How will we overcome that so that that will can also be declared null and void?
Person? Mama Nganye?
Yeah.
The chair is not here. Okay. Yeah. Mama Songo.
Thank you very much, Chair. Okay. Chair, let me welcome the presentation of the department and also mention that I think they've really covered everything and answered everything that was raised in our public hearings, which we must give a thumbs up to the department for that. One clarity from my side that I'd like the department to answer me on, it was an issue when we went to the public hearings that when a trial happens where an elderly person is involved, it should not take long. The trial should not take long, because sometimes the trial takes 2 or 3 years and the elderly person end up dying without even concluding the trial. So what is the department saying about this, the long period? I don't know how to put it, but the trial should not be long, because the longer the trial, it exhausts the elderly, and it should come from the department that they look into this matter. But apart from that, Chair, I think the department has really went through all the concerns that were raised by the Society of the Elder People in all these public hearings, and they really did answer to most of the cases. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. I was the next person in line. I also would like to greet each and everyone, and I want to say thank you to the department for this slides that showed us this input. I also would like to agree it's a very comprehensive one, and I agree with everything that they are saying here that covered everything. But I have a concern. My concern is with the protection order. The protection order has been given by court, and then when the police are supposed to do their work, they're not doing it. So all the person will be abused in the house, where the children will take the money, they will abuse the elderly people, sell their stuff, and then the police take its time. You can go to the police station, you can produce a protection order, you can tell them what is the problem. They will not go out and get that perpetrator. So even though this is very comprehensive, but they need to work with the police to see that the police are doing their job, because there's no use that the court is implementing this, but the police are not implementing this. And I also would like to agree with Honorable Ari said, you know, some of our people are older persons, they get dementia, they start forgetting things. So for them to go to court, sometimes they forget what they wanted to say. So it will be good if you make recordings. When you talk to the older people, when they are being interviewed, make recordings, keep the recordings. So when they forget, you can bring those things up again. Because a lot of our old people will remember things that happened many years ago, but they can't remember what happened now. That is one of the problems that we are sitting with. And I'm very happy to see they're going to train these people at the court, the clerks. They're going to train them how to work with the people, because at the public hearings, the majority of the old people are complaining the way they are being treated at the court and the way they are treated at the police stations. And they feel that the perpetrators and the young, they are being undermined as older people. So if you can look into that, because even at the police stations, the police men and women don't know how to handle these old people. They think these old people are just a nuisance. So if this training can be also incorporated at the police stations, so that the police can know how to treat our old people. And the abuse that is happening, you know, to these older people, it is taking them the memory that they are being abused. Sometimes the children are being rude, and it is having an impact on their brain, you know, because some old people can't stand these things. So, and then they feel that they are not being protected by the police and by the court. So this thing is very, very important that we need to implement it, and not just have it on paper, but also on a practical way, which is supposed to happen. Thank you so much, Jefferson.
Okay. Thank you, Honorable Polnitz. Honorable Bridget, followed thank by you. Honorable Stock.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you so much to the advocate for the presentation. It's really encouraging to see the developments and the improvements that are being made. Mine are just purely for clarity purposes. I would like to know what forms of communications or what platforms are being used to communicate all these improvements, such as your age-centric courts, environments, and all these things that have been presented today, because one finds that when dealing, especially in the Department of Social Development, where you deal with the older persons that contact you directly, one finds that there are resources that are available that are older person centric, but the older persons themselves do not know about them, and it is just a case of connecting the older persons to the available services so that they know about them and not be stranded when these services are actually provided by the government. So it's just for me a case of how widely and how regularly and how effective the communication of these very, much needed services are communicated to the audiences that benefit from them. And the next question speaks to the 149 upgraded courts. I just want to know what percentage of the total courts is this. I just want to understand the coverage and the footprint of this effort that has been made by the department. And Chairperson, I also heard the advocate say that they were talking about the waiting, that the Department of Justice was waiting for the promulgation of this particular amendment bill. I would like to know if the constitutional development part of the department is it not initiating some of these things to make sure that the constitutional development is happening, and not them having to wait for the promulgation of other departments or of beneficiary departments bills, because I'm just thinking, what if the waiting is long while they already have these improvements or these upgrades that they want to do in their work to make sure that the lives of those they are doing it for are made easier, instead of them waiting for promulgation of bills by other departments. And the last one, Chair, I was very excited to hear about the virtual initiative where older persons can actually be part of the court proceedings virtually. I know that it probably has not started yet. It's being processed, but I would like to know, will the people just, the older persons just get data and no person who will assist them? I'm assuming that some of them may not be in a position to set themselves up and make the proceedings smooth. Would they just have to find a person or a grandchild or a next door neighbor, or will there be a person that comes from the side of the court to assist them during the virtual hearing that they would be part of? And Chairperson, that would be it for me. Thank you so much again for such an encouraging presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable Stock.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also join my colleagues to appreciate the presentation. And then also I'd like to greet everyone who's in the meeting. And then also I think I agree with everyone who came before me and said this is quite an encouraging and quite comprehensive presentation. However, Chairperson, I've got just a few issues which I want to also just to put forward to the department in the form of questions for clarity, and then maybe also which will be able to clarify some of the issues that I also had in mind, which I think might have not been adequately covered by the presentation and so forth. And those that are covered by the presentation, in the interest of time and also justice, I will not canvass those issues. And then first and foremost, I would like to find out what measures are put in place by the department to ensure that the rights of the older persons are communicated to them, as well as the provision of the department to protect these rights, especially for older persons who are actually in the far rural areas. For an example here, I want to just to find out if there's any awareness programs or what programs are in place from the side of the department to ensure that all rights that have been covered by the presentation by the department, this is what we're doing. How do we then get to the older person and make sure that they are also aware in terms of what their rights are? And then I also want to find out how the department addressed the challenge of older persons forgiving the perpetrators and withdrawing charges, which actually, to a large extent, undermines the pursuit of justice. In the case of an older person who has actually been raped or maybe abused by someone, and then a case has been lodged with the police, and then when that case is, but is in, actually in the process before a court of law. And then such an older person then goes back to the perpetrator and then agrees to withdraw a case. And then I want to find out what is the department doing to ensure that such cases are actually being considered or taken into consideration as part of the priorities of such issues not happening. And then I also want to find out, does the department plan to address the potential lack of resources or infrastructure to support the virtual testimony of older witnesses? I think this was also indicated or presented to us, and one also appreciates the fact that there is a move to actually implement such programs as the virtual testimony in the court of law and so forth. But I want to find out from the department, does the department have like enough resources or infrastructure to support such a virtual platform for testimony or for older witnesses? And then what specific strategies are being implemented to reduce the high attrition rate in cases involving older persons beyond recognizing the need for court accompaniment services? And then lastly, Honorable Chairperson, I want to find out how will the department ensure that the training module for court clerks on the Older Persons Act is effectively implemented and that clerks are adequately prepared to assist older persons with cognitive impairments. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Those are my questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Stock. I don't see any other. So let's give over to, I think, Honorable Members have covered a lot. And have to do, but what you have done, justice, we really, really commend you on that. But you advocate.
Thank you, Chen. I was checking on the list and seeing that, wow, my colleagues did not join here, so I'm the only person who is here. So all the questions then, yeah. Now, starting with Honorable Aris, your question is about if then the older person has got dementia and the transfer of the property, how do we detect that? So this relates to issues of the chief masters, and I know that they are collaborating with the different stakeholders in such matters, but I wouldn't like to get deep in terms of responding to that question with my limited knowledge of that office. I tried to call them to join me right now, but I couldn't go through. So if this question, we can be allowed to respond to it in writing together with the one for the drafting of wills, because it is it falls under the office of the chief master. My apologies to those two questions. And then the other one is about giving a priority to the cases of older persons. What is it that we should be doing? What is it that we are doing, rather? So I would like just to start by saying that the case flow management falls under the judiciary. So the department has no say in those issues. And the case flow management, they do have their committees that are responsible for these issues. And they are headed, is three structures that I just want to give you the names of these structures. It's three structures that are chaired by the judiciary. So at high court level, it is called the National Integrated Court Optimization Committee, which is chaired by the Chief Justice, and it monitors, among other things, the speedy finalization of the cases of that related to gender-based violence and femicide. And it takes then the coordinated approach, because you cannot deal with a case alone as a department or as a judiciary. So there must be a coordinated effort between all the stakeholders that feed into the court space, and those who are working in the court space, they need to coordinate and work together in order to finalize just one case. Then at the structures, you find them at the, then you have the Provincial Integrated Court Optimization Committee that is chaired by the judge president. And then you also have the other one, which is the provincial one, which is chaired by the regional court presidents. So they all have the spectrum of the court, of the criminal justice actors that are so key in the criminal justice system. And those who are key in the criminal justice system, it serves, obviously, it is NPA, it is the judiciary. Then we have included the social development. And the reason for social development is because we must ensure that witnesses who come into our courts who are traumatized, who cannot testify, must go through, you know, the counseling, the trauma debriefing, and so social workers come into play. The intermediary services are also offered by the social workers as well. And we issued a government notice that permits the social workers to provide intermediary services as well. So it's that combination of all of those. And we also, now in terms of sexual offenses, let's say that now it's an older person who has been sexually violated. So in terms of Section 55, Capital A, Subsection 8, I would like to believe that it's Subsection 8. It requires this provision. It requires the judiciary to put together a framework for case flow management that will be giving priority to cases of gender-based, of sexual offenses. But of course, those cases, then I'm saying that in the case of sexual offenses, there is a provision that is in the Act that requires them to put together a framework that will prioritize those cases. So I was informed, the last time that I checked, I was informed that their framework is with the Chief Justice, awaiting the approval by the Chief Justice. So that is that in terms of prioritizing cases of older persons. The department has absolutely no role to play in those in case flow management. Now, coming to now to Honorable Shongo, I think then you mentioned the issue of us, what is it that we are doing to give priority to these cases. I think I have already responded to that. But you also mentioned the issue of what is it that will happen, you know, the reason that we want these cases to be given priorities because they will lose their memory and. So there is what? There's a provision that is in the Criminal Procedure Act, but now I'm responding. It's an area of prosecution, but I know it because I practice in courts for quite some time. So there's a provision in the Criminal Procedure Act that permits prosecution to refresh the memory of the witness before that witness is taken to court. And so the witness will be taken through the statement or the affidavit that he has made to refresh that memory is permitted by the Criminal Procedure Act to do so. But this is not to justify the delay in the management of these cases. It's not to justify, but I'm saying that there is also a legal provision that permits the prosecution to do that. And also, prosecution also has what is called the court preparation program. The court preparation program, it is about of course, preparing the witness for court, but it provides the containment, the emotional containment service. That's the word that I was looking for, the term that I was looking for. Is the emotional containment service. They are taken through that before. There's a pre-trial emotional containment service that they receive, and also the post-trial emotional containment service built into this court preparation program that is provided by the court preparation officers hired or employed full-time, employed by the NPA. So they are working very closely with the prosecution. So the purpose of that is to ensure that we don't take a witness to court who is not emotionally ready to testify, because sometimes others will have the flashbacks and be traumatized and so in that instant that witness must not be taken to court to testify. That case must be postponed so that the witness is taken. If the pre-trial emotional containment service did not succeed to make the witness emotionally ready to testify, so that witness now is transferred to social development for trauma debriefing. And if trauma debriefing failed, then it's going to be the counseling service. All right. So that is that. Because if we do so, we will be subjecting that victim to secondary traumatization. And that is what we don't want in our court. Now, Honorable Marais was asking then about the police, what is it that we're doing in order to ensure that then the protection orders, when the victim go to police station, older person go to police station, and issues of protection order. First is to say that protection orders are not applied for at the police station. It's something that we have been saying a lot to people, that don't go to police station when you want to apply for a protection order. It's only us, the courts, that provide that service. So you can go to police station because the Domestic Violence Act does not prohibit you from going to police station, but to lay a criminal charge, because it has a provision there that says that as a victim of domestic violence, you have a right to apply for a protection order against the abuser or to lay a criminal charge if the act of domestic violence perpetrated against you also constitute a crime. All right. Or you can take both actions simultaneously. So when the victims go to police station, they are going there for the purposes of laying a criminal charge on a domestic violence matter that they have experienced. Because it is possible that you experience an act of domestic violence that does not constitute a crime. That would be first to say that maybe you are deprived of a property, so that's a civil action, all right? So you cannot go and apply, or lay a criminal charge on that unless there was an element of theft. This property was transferred without you knowing and all. But at the end, you have to institute civil actions because it's a property. It has a monetary value attached to it. So now getting to that, when we were amending the Domestic Violence Act, we decided that let's deal with the issues of delay, particularly with the service of the protection orders. So we put times attached to that. Now, what we are saying is that this is in terms of Section 12 of the Domestic Violence Act and read with Regulation 32 of the Domestic Violence Regulations of 2022. So what we are saying now is that an interim protection order, if you have applied for an interim protection order, the service thereof must be made within 24 hours, counted from the time of the issue of that protection order by the court. So as soon as the magistrate granted the protection order, time starts to tick. That is for the police, for the clerks of the court, and the sheriff, because those are the three stakeholders who are permitted in terms of Section 12 of the Domestic Violence Act to do service or process, to do service or processes issued in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. So now one is going to be asking as to how are the clerks of the courts servicing this document. So they are expected by the Act, impliedly so, to serve these documents when the parties are in court. And also, we included them, previously it was when the parties are in court, but we decided that let us also include the online servers. All right, so that service can be done by the clerk of the court sitting on her desk and serve the protection order. So we did not only do it, that provision, we also included in our APP. It's in our APP for the next financial year, so as to make our clerks of the court to be aware. We trained them already on this provision. And why? It's because we wanted to unblock the delays that are there on the police and the sheriffs, because people, some victims don't want to go to the sheriffs, because with the sheriffs then we have to pay. All right. So the police are overwhelmed with the services, with the service of processes issued in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. So now we permitted all these stakeholders that they can do service, online service, and we're going to move on, because now this act, I think that is very ambitious, because we have also included service via social media. All right, it is there, it is written there in this, in our regulations, that you can also do service on social media. But for now, we have to have control measures in place that will help us then to be able to say that there was a return of service if it was done on social media. So now we have suspended that, but not suspended in terms of operation, but in terms of the operationalization of the act, but in terms of us implementing it for our court clerks. So our court clerks now can, they have already started that, Chairperson, to serve protection orders online, provided that when the applicant was making the application for the protection order, included the email address of the respondent. Or in the case where the email address of the respondent was not included, the clerk of the court calls the complainant and ask for that email address, and also to check from the complainant whether it will this be a suitable measure of service that you would prefer, or would you like us then to send it to the police so that the police can do the service. And with the final protection order, the time that has been set for that service is 48 hours, all right? 24 hours for the interim protection order and 48 hours if it is for the service of the final protection order. Now, because of these measures that I knew that have been placed, I therefore set a task team. It's a task team that is for the sheriffs. We have the sheriffs there, subs officials, and us, and Justice College, because Justice College have included Justice College, so as to train the sheriffs and the police. Of course, they do have their center that is responsible for their training. And so we are meeting by monthly, and the purpose is for us to take a seamless approach in compliance with these time frames that have been set by the Act, and to create and also to develop. for a start, because the department is already developed a system. We have an online system. It's an online solution for applications for protection order. We started to develop it in 2021, and it was finalized in 2022. We finalized it in 2022. So it was a 2-year process of developing that system. Now we said to the police that because police, they don't have a dedicated system that is for the domestic violence matters. So we said to them that create dedicated email addresses, and we said that to the sheriffs as well. So the sheriffs have already heeded to the call and created dedicated email addresses that the clerk of the court will be able to use when the complainant says that I want my process to be served by the sheriffs. So it is sent by email. And also the police, we are saying that the police should do the same thing. So they are working on that. And I am the person who is monitoring that process. Now, moving to Honorable Masongo. Honorable Masongo, you are asking as to how are we communicating? Did we communicate this? Before this act came into operation, I was the person who was chairing 8 task teams that were intending to, that were established to ensure the country readiness for the implementation of these 3 amendment acts. So these structures were the structures that were also had the representation of the civil society organizations. So, and also we costed the 3 pieces of legislation as well before they were promulgated. I mean, before the bills were promulgated into law, we already had these 8 task teams that we put together. So there was one that was for public education. And that one, because it was during COVID-19, so we were using virtual learning sessions for the different stakeholders and all that, and also for the older persons, because we are working very closely with the Department of Social Development in older persons' interventions, since they are the ones who are leading the implementation of this legislation. So they also participated in these interventions, where then we ask that the centers to connect older persons who are there in those centers so that they can hear and learn about these amendments and. But post COVID-19 pandemic, now what we did was to hold the imbizos. So in our imbizos, I'm going to give you the figures for the imbizos that we held in the previous financial year, because that's the information that I have right now. We had imbizos in all the department, in all the provinces. So I will make in the Eastern Cape, and I have the list also here of the communities as well. And others, like in Butterworth in the Eastern Cape, were held with the traditional leaders. And in Mount Aleph on the 24th of November 2022, they were held with the older persons organizations and community members and so on. And there, they reached a number of 12,186 in the Eastern Cape. But with Eastern Cape, it was community members. It was also the youth as well, because we are aware of the violence that older persons are experiencing that is perpetrated by youth. So now in Free State, we did the same thing. And in Free State, they were able to reach a total of 2,308 people. And in Gauteng as well, so it's 5,211, and in KZN and so on. But I have all of these if the committee would like then to get all this information. But anyway, this report is in our website. It is a report, it's an annual report 2022-2023 for the implementation of the of the sexual offences. So we included older persons in the sexual offences include because there is sexual abuse for older persons and all that. And also we included then these acts when we were doing all these interventions. So we have all that listed there. But we did not stop there with the individuals. So there were also then the webinar series that I have mentioned, and the webinar series, we did them and with social development counted in, and we also had the exhibitions on GBVF, where some of them, the centers for older persons, were also invited to come, and they were down. Some were held at the centers, because it's difficult to congregate older persons and ask them to come to a particular venue because of the physical limitations and so on. So with us, public education, Chairperson, as a department, we are so big on public education. We do it. Our provinces are doing it. The national office also does it. And. So now, why did we wait, Honorable Masson, why did we wait for the promulgation, whereas the constitution is already there? So when we do these public educations, We alert people of their constitutional rights, because we are the custodians of the constitution. So we cannot leave it out in anything that we are doing. So that is why we did not wait for, we developed the headings for our court clerks, and also we develop educational material that is for the older person. It's available, Chairperson, in Braille, in large font. Large font is also, I think it's 24 font or something like that, or 20 font, but it's very huge. It's a booklet that is huge. And we also have then the audios and the pictorial. So that information is already out there. But with the act, you have to follow the act. You cannot develop a learning material that will speak against the piece of legislation. You have to wait for it, because when you develop a learning module for the legislation, you have to say that in terms of section so and so, and this you are tying with this, you are giving the legal interpretation of that provision, and so on. So you have to wait for the proper legislation. That is not self-contradictory to be in place before you can put together a learning material. So that is why even the KZN, the KZN judiciary told me that they are not gonna implement the Older Persons Act in certain provisions because of the reasons that I have said. But now we are excited that this committee is working on this and is gonna help us then as the courts to be able then to implement this legislation. So how many courts do we have? If we're saying that we have developed and we have upgraded 149 courts in terms of the minimum standards for reasonable accommodations. So we have 371 magistrate courts. And tied to that, we have 96 branch courts. And the branch courts are the courts that are intended to bring justice close to the communities. But now, with this rationalization, we're going to see more of the courts now operating. Some of the branch courts now will be elevated to a level of a district court, all right, so as to ensure that that particular court, that particular community has a full-blown court services. So we also have 227 periodical courts, and the periodical courts are attached to the regional divisions. So now, even those are intended to bring, they are intended to bring services to our people. And we also have 27 detached courts. They are called detached courts. We also have 14 high courts in the country. We have one Supreme Court of Appeal. And of course, we have one Constitutional Court. And that brings these courts to a total of 738 courts. So it's a long journey. So now our focus is on the 371 magistrate courts. transport, where we are upgrading them into courts that are compliant, that are disability centric and also age centric. So we have 149 thus far, and I would also like to say that I think that we would have been too far by now if we were not experiencing budget cuts, because there are resources that we need to put in place there that are then making them the figures to be low. Now this year We in terms of our APP, it's 65 courts that we are supposed to be upgraded in terms of these minimum standards, and we are already done. We were done with these courts as at 31st of December 2023, and we upgraded 68 instead of 65. So we are moving on, and had we have more funds, as I said, we'll be able to do more. All right, and our target is to do 371. Should the at the end of the rationalization process, it might also add to that 96 branch courts, but I'm not part of that project, but I know that it is moving as expected in terms of pace. Now, Honorable Stock, the public interventions, education interventions, I've made reference to. And when we are doing the public interventions for older persons, we always have, which is something that I did not mention, there will be a sign language interpreter. We also draw in that person. And when we do them, if it is physical, we will also have in between. We provide them with fruit and what and water bottles so that they are able to take their medication during the time of the session and all that. So we are aware of those reasonable accommodations that they need during this session. So we ensure that we provide them with those when it is a physical imbizo. Now, you ask question about the withdrawal of charges as to what is it that we are doing in terms of the withdrawal of charges. It falls within the mandate of the prosecution. But I am chairing a committee that is dealing with the issues. For instance, I'll say that with one is for domestic violence, the other one is for sexual offences, the other one is for Pillar 3 of the NSP, the National Strategic Plan for GBVF. So that's where we deal with all these issues and take the NPA to task as to what is it that you are doing. So all this information that I was giving you, it was relating to that. Now, in sexual offences, because you made reference to sexual offences, what is the position? They have the national policy directives for the management of sexual offences matters, which is these directives, they are expected to develop them in terms of Section 66 of the Criminal Law, Sexual Offences and Related Matters Amendment Act. They are in a process right now of tabling them in Parliament, because they have amended them now to incorporate the changes introduced by the amendment to this legislation. So now, in terms of that, they stipulated in all these issues that with the case of sexual is very serious. We don't want you to do diversions in those cases. We don't want you to do mediation. We don't want you to withdraw those charges, because we are a country that is seriously infested with sex crimes. And in 2018, we were saying that femicide, you are in the lead, but come 2019 up to now, sexual violence is at a peak in South Africa. The numbers are so high in sex crimes. So now those are the things that we are monitoring. So they will be presenting their amended directives to us very soon. Now, you mentioned the issue of the infrastructural shortages. That's the biggest problem that we have. For instance, in cases that, in instances where we have to upgrade a monumental building, we are prohibited by the laws, all right, that would break that wall and all, because in others we do that. We break the walls and create a space, a designated space that is for the witnesses, because that's what we want to do. We want to have a designated space that will be for the witnesses, so as to prevent the physical contact with the accused when they have come to our court. So, but it's difficult with the monumental buildings. So we sat then and we said that what is it that we need to do in order to deal with those issues, hence the virtual proceedings, all right? Hence, and with the virtual proceedings, now we are connecting, we are engaging with them, with the shelters, with the shelter movement, and the Kidivela care centers, and the police, the victim friendly rooms for the police, and all these spaces, and the Kuseleka one stop centers, and so we would want our witnesses to be able to go to those centers, to those infrastructures, to testify. All right, because they are close to the communities. And I think with police, they have a lot of those victim-friendly rooms, and Kuseleka one-stop centers, they are still low. I think there are about 6 in the country thus far. So, but we want all those to be able to provide, and the Kuseleka care centers, there are 68 currently. So they must, witnesses must be able to go there, and you know, the data is going to be free, and then they connect with our courts to provide those services, particularly in those environments where we are unable to fit in the minimum standards. But we keep on visiting the minimum standards to see as to what is it that we need to do. For instance, we have reduced now. Previously, we were saying that there should be a private waiting area, which is for children, a private waiting area, which is for elder persons. But now we have decided that how about now combining the two, all right? So because we have these shortages in terms of the infrastructure, so it's our biggest problem. But now, as we are building new courts, all right, progressively, so those courts have the model for the courts. I forgot this particular word that we use. So what we have done, we have injected the infrastructural services for witnesses. So if you go to our newest courts that are there, you will find that there's a family site, a division where then you will get all these witness areas and built into our courts. So that's basically what we are doing. The measures to reduce the attrition rate, this is, you know, we requested NPA that maybe we need to do some kind of a research as to why witnesses leave the system early, before we can say that we develop a strategy. Let's know as to, and let's not time stop those reasons and do a research. But we have started with the one for domestic violence, and we have partnered then with MRC, the South African Medical Research Council. So it's going to start in May this year, that research, which is going to be looking into all these things, because we really want to know, is it because we are not providing the services that they need? Is it because of secondary traumatization? Is it because of, we want to know all those reasons before we can say that this is a strategy that is intended to retain our victims in the system until their cases are finalized, because the criminal justice system is doomed without witnesses. And that has been my approach ever since I joined the Department of Justice, to place more focus on witnesses, because if we don't treat them the way that they need to, not the way that we think that they must be treated, the way that they need to be treated, we will be experiencing a huge attrition rate in these cases. So we're working towards those issues and to address them. So hopefully when the research is going to be a three-year research, because when I sat with them, they said that this is big, praise is big. We must not do it 1 year, 2 years. It needs 3 years. So I'm happy with that. So it's going to be a three-year research of all the victims of domestic violence to find, but it's a number of issues. It's not limited to attrition, but it's a number of issues. So as to clean up the system for the victims of domestic violence and reduce the femicide rate, because that's my goal. Thank you so much, Chair.
Chair?
Can Honorable Manganyi take over, like the chair said earlier on?
Lindy. I remember Masango, I just spoken to the chairperson. You may proceed if you want to make a follow-up question.
Thank you so much, chairperson, and thanks, advocate. The question that I think I missed from your responses is the one about, because I think you partly said that there are all the Khuselega centers and all those things. I was under the impression that this can actually happen at the home of the victim. This virtual testimony situation, and I was asking if at the home for the aged, at their home, at home where they live with their family, would there be anything other than the data that would be provided for them to be able to smoothly log in and be part of the hearing, please? I heard about the other infrastructure resources like your Khuselega centers. Thank you so much, advocate. Thanks.
May I go ahead, Chair? I'm waiting for the permission.
Chair? Member Stock, Member Manganyi, may the presenter, Advocate Kabula, respond to the question while I'm trying to get hold of the chairperson. Member Stock and Member Manganyi.
Hello. Hello.
This is Manganyi. May you take over to finalize the proceedings?
Okay. Where are we now?
Still on question. Manganyi, Mama Masango posed a question, to a follow-up question to the presenter, and then it was the time for the presenter to respond. And now I can see Member Marae's hand is up. I don't know whether she wants a follow-up question, so we can take it from there, Acting Chair.
Okay, thank you. May you respond, ma'am? Hello?
May I say, Chairperson, Mema Ga'ane?
Can I also have a follow-up question? Because the question I asked was not understood properly.
Ask so that she must take it also.
Maybe the question that I've asked about the order that's been given to the older persons, no? Is the problem that when they must take it to the police station, the police is not implementing that. The protection order and the court order that they're having, the police are not, they can go over and over to the police. The police will always have an excuse of not implementing that thing. So you can go to court, you can get a protection order, you can get all the things, but the police are not giving their cooperation when it comes to that thing. That is what I'm saying. The lady was explaining about you must go to court, you can go to police to open a case and all those things. I'm asking if you got that protection order and you take it to the police station, that is where the problem is starting, Mary Jane. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ma'am, I'm handing over to you to respond.
Thank you, Acting Chair. I will respond first to Honorable Masangwe.
Yes, it's Honorable Masangwe.
Yes. Then the first one is asking about the virtual proceedings. Where are they supposed to be held? We did not specify in the legislation as to where they should be held. So it is any place that best suits the victim. So meaning that they can be held at your home environment, provided that you would have the devices that are required. And the only thing that we're looking at doing as a department now is to pay for your data. But now we have to do the policy amendment so as to accommodate that. So, but now we are saying that for those who don't have the devices like the laptop, because we wouldn't like people, you know, to preside using the devices that will not be clear and will not be able to see them as they testify. Remember that the demeanor of the person, your face is very important. We must be able to see you. We must also be able to see where you are presiding, whether are you reading, are you what? So there must be the full view. That this information is not information that you are reading somewhere, or there is no person around you who's actually coaching you on your testimony. So now that is why we said that for us then to be able to satisfy all those requirements, we are in a process of engaging with all these infrastructural service points, all right, so that they are able then to provide these services for us. The people who don't have the devices, people who don't have data, will be able then to go to the victim-friendly rooms and testify the way that they are expected to. So that is what I was saying. Otherwise, you can testify anywhere. But it must be a place that is enclosed. It must be a place that is noise-free, all right, so as to respect the proceedings and to ensure that your voice is audible and the other things that I have also mentioned are also satisfied. Now, going to Honorable Marais, you were saying that the protection order should be taken to police. This is something that we learned of, and it's a malfunction in terms of our legislation. The Domestic Violence Act does not permit, does not require complainants to go to the police station with a protection order to request the police to serve the document. No, we don't have that at all. So with this Amendment Act, we tried then to tighten that and to ensure that there is no room at all for it to use our complaint. You cannot go to court and as a complainant to make an application for the protection order. Now you are used as a vehicle of transporting this protection order to police. No, we can't have that situation. And it's not in the Act at all. So now the protection order, the police must go to the court to collect protection orders that have been issued on that particular day and ensure that they are, the service of those protection orders are done, if it's interim protection order, are done within 24 hours. So it is this task team that I talked about that is intended then to establish modalities that will be helping all these three stakeholders to ensure that there's compliance with the time frames that have been set. All right, to provide those resources. If it's going to be one police official who's going to be going to court every hour or every 3 hours to collect the protection order, let it be. But if they're going to be coming every 3 hours, they must know that they have lost the 3 hours of their 24 hours for service. So it is those issues that we're dealing with. And we said, even there are directives, the national instructions for police, they are not conspicuous in that area. So it was particularly our concern in the task team that you did not put it in black and white that this is it, but they said that it is something that is done by your clerks of the court. So in our directives, then we ensured and we held a training sessions on section 12. And those training sessions were held in 2023 on the implementation of Section 12, which is about the service of processes issued in terms of the Domestic Violence Act. So as to ensure that there is no clerk, and the directives that say that should you deviate from the act, then the department must take an action against you, a disciplinary action against you. So that is what we have put in place. Otherwise, we don't want all the victims. There is no victim that must take a protection order to police at all. At all. It's a malfunction. Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Is there anyone who wants to do the follow-up, or are we done, members? Hello, members. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you, Chair. Thank you.
We do hear you.
Okay. It means we are done with the follow-up, ne?
Yes,
Lindy. What is the next, Lindy?
Chair, that was the presentation for today's meeting. And higher education were not available to present their response today due to a meeting scheduled for today. Yes, Chair, that was the only presentation for today. Chair, Acting Chair, can I also record, for record purposes, the apology of Member Sugars? I've just received it 30 minutes ago and apologize for the delayed apology. And indicated that she won't be with us today, as well as on Friday's meeting that has been scheduled due to prior commitments. So I just wanted to tender that apology for the record purposes, Chair. Thank you very much.
Noted. Thank you very much. I must also thank the presenters to also give flesh to what we have as the older persons replying on what they were asked, the clarities, the question seeking clarity. So I think I have on behalf of the committee to thank you, and also on behalf of the chairperson of this committee, thank you so much for availing yourself when the committee asks you to come and brief them with issues that they've got concern, or those who doesn't, the issue that we don't understand, wanted to understand them better. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you, Chairperson. It was our pleasure. as a department to present before this committee. As I said, that we are looking forward to the passing of this legislation so that we can fully implement it as a department. Thank you so much, Chair.
You're welcome.
May I therefore be excused?
Yes, you may.
Thank you.
Excuse.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Lindy?
Chair?
There's no other agenda item, Chair. You may adjourn the meeting.
Yeah, thank you very much, honorable members, for making sure that you avail yourself and make sure that whatever that we want is best for our elderly. We make sure that our voice is heard, even on the department when they do some bills or add some issues on the bills. We make sure that the issue that we wanted to be included for the elderly person, we make sure that we raise our views. Thank you so much. The meeting is officially adjourned. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Welcome, members.
Thank you, Jay.